everyone. Today, I spoke with my good friend and current head coach of the Caltech women's basketball program, Bridget Reyes. She became the head coach for Caltech in May 2017 after coaching for the NCAA Division I program, Loyola Marymount University. Prior to LMU, she was the head coach at Bishop Montgomery High School for 3 years, where she won 2 CIF championships and was named Coach of the Year twice. She's also been an assistant at the NCAA Division II and NAIA Division I levels. Bridget received a scholarship to Boise State right out of high school and then later transferred to Vanguard University, where she became the NAIA Player of the Year in 2008 and in that same year won a national championship. I'm so excited for her to share her story, things that she's learned, challenges she's overcome, and so much more. Let's roll it back and see how the conversation went.
All right, so Bridget, tell me, what got you into coaching and when did it start?
I would say I really didn't know coaching is what I wanted to do until after college. After playing in Portugal and kind of researching master's degrees and which one was the right one for me. And I feel like I found the perfect fit in coaching and athletic administration. And then talking to my former college coach, Russ Davis, who allowed me to be on his staff and actually was excited about the idea. So it's really not until then where I knew I wanted to be a coach. I think as a kid, my dad sat me down in front of the TV, in front of Laker games, and that definitely described to me the IQ part of the game, which is, you know, why was that a good move or why wasn't that a good move, and really taught me that part of the game, which I've, you know, really been keen on my whole life. But yeah, not until after college is when I decided that.
Awesome. All right. So where was your first assistant coaching job? So it was at Vanguard, right? That's where you first became an assistant coach.
Yes, it was. It was at Vanguard University, under Coach Russ Davis.
Awesome. And, okay. Yeah. And what were some of your responsibilities or, you know, things that we like to say as assistants that we're the head coach of? So what were you the head coach of at Vanguard?
Well, it was so long ago, it feels like, so I'll try to remember. I think I had pretty basic assistant coach responsibilities as far as scouting and recruiting and skill work. But I really think that I was so lucky, and I didn't realize it at the time, to really be involved in practice planning and offensive and defensive strategies. And I really felt like I had an opinion, which I think it should be that way always, but it's not. It's not that way for many assistants, especially being a first year assistant. So, you know, at one point in the season, Coach Davis was also unable to coach in games. So I got the opportunity to be and act as a head coach for 6 games. And that was really eye-opening for me. And right then and there, I knew this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
That's awesome. What was your record for those 6 games?
You know, luckily it was 6-0.
That's awesome. All right. So earlier on in your career as an assistant, we'll say, instead of saying just the first year, we'll say all of those years lumped up. What was the biggest mistake that you made as an assistant coach?
There are too many to count, I would say. You know, especially as a young person who just got done playing, I think, you know, you take for granted all the things that were given to you. So when you have a scouting report handed to you, you're thinking, oh, it just magically got done. You know, you don't think about the work put in by your coaches to do that one scouting report. And I think, you know, as a young coach, that was an adjustment for me, like all the film work for one scout, at all my jobs. And also, you know, just the film work it took to analyze the, you know, our game that we played, and that's how you prepare and plan for practice and how you develop kids and you get better. So I would say that, and I would say better communication. You know, I wasn't a great communicator. You can't assume your head coach knows what you're thinking and what your intentions are, and vice versa. You can't assume that you know what your head coach wants. So I think being a better communicator would be something that I would do over again if I could.
Awesome. Well, with that, what sort of nuggets, if any, have you taken away from the head coaches that you've worked for and you utilize them now in your current program? And this could be anything as far as, you know, drills, style of play, offenses, maybe culture, anything.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to work for many different programs and many different styles of play and head coaches. And as far as nuggets, I mean, I the biggest nugget for me, even as a player, I took away is discipline. You know, the same drills I hated as a player, I definitely use as a coach. I always take competitive drills from each coach I work for. I always steal a play or two from each coach. The biggest thing I learned too is being at the higher level was more recruiting practices and organization of recruiting. It's because it's very different at every level. And yes, team values and standards, and how you're communicating those standards to a team, and reminding them on a daily basis. And, you know, are you giving them binders and notebooks? Are you preaching it in your language every day? So I've taken something away from every program, and sometimes, you know, it's valuable to take away things that you wouldn't do in your own program. You know, sometimes that can be more valuable. So I would say every program I work for, I've learned so much and taken away, you know, every aspect of programs from them.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So moving to your, well, I guess this could be as an assistant coach or even as a head coach, what would you say is the biggest conflict that you've had with a player, and how did you handle it or learn from it?
I think as an assistant coach, you have to be pretty straightforward when it comes to conversing with players. And it's almost like sometimes when you're too casual or you care about them and you want to make them feel better, you know, lines can get crossed there. So you really just want to like be straightforward, whether they're complaining about something or they're trying to tell you about something. I think the best communication with as an assistant coach is to be like, hey, this is what it is. You know, if you have any more questions, talk to head coach. I haven't had many conflicts that way. The biggest conflict I had actually was being a head coach. And I had a player that just really wasn't bought into team values. And, you know, as coaches, we expect our kids to, you know, be engaged and be positive. And for most of us, you know, we're having our players talk in practice. They're talking through drills, they're communicating, they're clapping, they're always talking. And I had a kid that, you know, just didn't want to do it. You know, when you only have 7 or 8 players on the team, and that kid is a, you know, big part of that team, you know, both skill wise and 30% of your offense and defense, you know, it's hard to make those decisions to remove a kid when all we do is preach about culture as coaches. But it's harder to live out those values when you don't have enough kids or you don't have enough talent. So going through that process, I think we try to give a kid every chance to be different and to grow as a person, as a player, as a teammate. But at the end of the day, if we preach about culture and how important it is, especially being the most important thing about our team, then we have to make decisions based on those values and we have to follow through with that. And I took a little longer than I should have, I would say, but I don't regret it, because the moment at which that decision was made to, you know, remove a player from our team, you know, I knew I had exhausted every option besides that. So, you know, our team with one last player and one of the best players not on our team, we actually went on to win 5 more games and break the all-time wins record. So culture really does matter. And as hard as it was to make that decision, I think we really need to follow through on those values that we preach. You know, you can't sacrifice the team for one individual. So that's kind of what I learned.
Yeah, no, I love that. You know, I actually lived that out this past season. We had, you know, we were very low in numbers. We had, at best, we had 5 healthy players, a roster of 7. And this was one of those years where I essentially had to learn just that, that no matter what, you really cannot let your morals and values waver, because it's going to affect the entire team. If it's okay for one player to do it, then another player is going to start to test the waters a little bit, and then it's just contagious. Yeah. So you might have to lose a couple games, forfeit a couple games, or finish some games 3-5. But at the end of the day, you know, thinking long term, I think that it's big picture and it's what you need to do to have some integrity and credibility as a coach. So I'm right there with you. I learned that as well.
Yeah. And I think it's easier to be honest at our level and how we're coaching, because, you know, at the end of the day, we aren't going to be let go for wins and losses. I don't believe. And I know it gets stickier and harder and more complicated at the Division I level, Division II level, you know, when your jobs are on the line trying to make those decisions. So it's not easy at any level, but I definitely am thankful that, you know, we are allowed to, you know, put team culture and character first and not be punished for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So was there ever a time when you questioned if this was something that you wanted to continue doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have at least one moment, right, where we reconsider what we're doing and why we're doing it. You know, we don't do this for the money, I hope. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we all go through tough circumstances, whether it be like a really bad environment or staff, or maybe you don't feel like you're being treated well or with respect, or you're not being used for the skills that you have. And that's a big thing too, like, you know, purpose. And if you feel like you're really living out your purpose, you're pretty happy, you know, with your life and with your career. But there's so many times too where people are putting in so much time and we, you know, some of us barely have enough money to live in certain jobs, and how much longer are you going to do that? So whatever circumstance that a coach has been through, I feel like we've all been through at least one moment where we've reflected and been like, is this what I want to do for the rest of my life? But yeah, I've had that moment. I've probably had a couple moments like that. But I couldn't be happier, because there's always a moment in the course of a season where you're reminded it is worth it. Mm-hmm. And there are many circumstances and situations where, you know, you realize that, but I think all of us have that moment every year where we know, okay, this is worth it.
Absolutely. Can you pinpoint your most stressful moment in your career?
Oh man. Every year there's a really stressful moment. you know, again, I don't want to get into details about each program, but there's been a different moment each year where I've been, you know, extremely stressed out, whether that's your record again, or you're not, you don't feel like you're being treated right, or, you know, maybe, you know, even at the head coach level, you know, you're responsible and you're liable for so many things, and kids can complain, parents can complain, it can get up the ladder, there can be lawsuits, there can be threats, you know, of that, and there could be really anything where you're like, holy cow. Each moment is stressful at that time. You think, man, this is the most stress I've ever been. Well, that's every year, right? There's always one moment where you think that. So, you know, it's a continuing thing. I think as coaches, we're used to it, but it still hurts and it's still stressful. But we are still never surprised by the never ending moments in our season where we think it's a big deal that we're having to deal with something. Mm-hmm.
Yay! Okay, so I'm curious to know, and this is just a question that came off the top of my mind, but so I know that you've been an assistant coach. You've been an assistant coach at, you know, Division One, NAIA Division One, Division Two. You've been a head coach at the high school level and won a CIF championship your first year, say CIF Coach of the Year. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't you win CIF again?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Amazing. So you're a head coach first 2 years, you win CIF. And then, you know, after some time, you are now the head coach at Caltech. I'm curious to know, how has your coaching changed from being a head coach of a high school program, from being through, you know, seeing all these different styles of coaching at all these different levels, and now it's your program at the Division III level? How do you coach?
Well, my mindset has had to change big time. As you know, we've been very successful players and had a great playing career and been very fortunate as well to be a part of some really great coaching programs where we've had success. And I think it's a whole new environment. And when you have, you know, like you said, 5 to 8 kids on your whole team, and two of those kids are injured all the time, or whatever it is, you know, like, you know, yeah. we're going to from 25 game winning seasons to, you know, 5 game winning seasons. And, you know, it's really hard to wrap your head around that. You're like, wow, this is where I'm at. But, you know, you can't look at it like that. You can't look at it like the world looks at success. It can't be about numbers and records. It has to be every situation where you're at. You're taking those 5 to 7 kids and you're changing their lives, because you got there and nobody believed they could do anything. Nobody believed they could win. Nobody believed they could compete. And you're coming in thinking, not this is a friggin' challenge, but this is an opportunity for me, for those kids, for this program to really excel. And I think when you can change those kids' mindsets and really help them believe that they can do anything, that's where the real change and growth happens. And, you know, your reward is not going to be in your record right now. That'll be someday. I really believe that. But your reward's going to be when those kids call you after they graduate and they check in and they want to talk to you, and they, you know, they want to see how you're doing. And, you know, it kind of reminds you of the work that you've done in their 4 years or their 2 years of having you in their life. And, you know, hopefully someday when they're inviting you to their weddings and you're really part of their lives and you're reminded just how special they are and just how special you were to them. I think that's where it really changes. And so, you know, my mindset's changed a lot. I've had to deal with being extremely competitive, and I still am, but I've had to change my expectations and my goals and how I define success for those kids too. And I think you can definitely relate. And I think, you know, your program is definitely on the upside and it's growing and you're going to see those results very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. That's something that we talk about a lot as a coaching staff and as a program, like, hey, I want that wedding invite. You know, I want to know you 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. I want to still be in your life. We're talking about lifelong relationships here. Not just the 2 years that I have you at OCC, but I mean, just like you said, you know, last year, shoot, we won 2 games. We had to cancel like 14 games, something like that. I honestly try not to think about the exact number. All I know is we won 2 games. Okay. And those were awesome, awesome days. But the 2 games I'm talking about were the awesome days. But you know, when I look back on last year, I'm not disappointed in my team. You know, I'm not like, wow, they were unsuccessful. Sure, we didn't get it done on the court, but they did everything that I asked them to do. And I rave and rave and rave about their culture and just how responsive they were. And I haven't always had an excellent culture every single place that I've been. But last year, you know, that's something that I'm super proud of. And I don't look at last year's success based on just, okay, wow, look at the OCC women's basketball program. They were 2-14. They were unsuccessful. I don't see that. I'm like, no, like there was a buzz around my campus about my team. Like I can go on and on, but I'm not, you know, this is about you, not me. But anyways, just to your point, that it really isn't about wins and losses. That's just kind of like the icing on the cake or the cherry on top.
Right. And I think you can agree when you have, you know, a small group who has, you know, pushed through a ton of adversity and they continue to show up every day and give you everything they have. Like, you know, you're excited to go to work every day. You're excited to step in that gym every day with that special group of kids, no matter what your record is. And I think, you know, that's really fulfilling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I chuckle there because I'm thinking, you know, when you said that, I'm thinking how many times, and I'm curious to know if this is the same case for you. Did you prepare a practice plan and then have to just start fresh within 2 hours before practice because, you know, there was like a new injury or someone had a class or I don't know, something? Because that happened to me a lot. Just crumpled up and start over.
The first day of practice last year, I had to beg a volleyball kid and a soccer kid to join my basketball team. So I had 7, you know? So I think the first day when they were still in their fall sports, I had 5 kids, and the first 2 drills, someone dribbled it off their foot and tripped, hurt their knee. And then someone landed wrong on a layup. So then I had 3 kids my first day, and I'm thinking, this is very inspiring. You know, this is where we're at.
Oh my God. I know. I remember when we went to lunch last time and we're just sharing stories and much like the ones that you're sharing now, it's so funny because, you know, we can get through that. We can get through anything, right?
Exactly. You know, I was, you know, we often, both of us, you know, talk to, you know, coaches at the higher levels and try to ask, you know, what they do for skill work and some plays and practice. And I remember it, you know, a very well-known Pac-12 coach telling me, I'm like, hey, what do you do for skill work for guards who can't shoot? He's like, why are you recruiting guards that can't shoot? And I'm like, I don't think you understand like what it takes to get into this school. We don't have a choice. We have to take kids who have the SAT scores and the grades and the extracurriculars. You know, are they building robots? Have they gone to the moon? You know, we don't, you know, those kids get in, you know? So it was just funny how, you know, people don't understand like what, you know, recruiting is here.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's so funny that you bring that up, because that leads to my next question. So yes, you're at Caltech, which according to some publications is the hardest school in the country to get into. And many would say the hardest school in the country to recruit for, just like you touched on now. So my question is, how the heck do you get it done? Because you do. I mean, Caltech has turned around since you've been there. Like you said, you've had the winningest wins in a season as the head coach of the Caltech women's basketball team. So how do you get it done?
You know, it's about having the right kids with the right mindset. And I, although we always haven't had the skill level or the height or the athleticism to really compare ourselves with other teams in our league in the SCIAC, you know, I've been very fortunate enough to have kids who are open and who buy in and who really believe in themselves and the program. So I think changing mindsets and coaching, you know, is hopefully one of my strengths, I'd like to think. So when you kind of, you know, say to yourself, all right, like, I just got to do the best I can with what I have. Recruiting, I have no control over who gets in the school. They could have perfect test scores and perfect grades and perfect everything and still not get in, because over 8,000 kids apply to this school and 235 are, you know, is the class that we have between men and women. So it's the kids, it's really the kids. So the combination of surrounding myself with a great coaching staff who is different than me and who have different strengths than me, and really getting these kids to believe in themselves. And they've done that. And they've competed with teams that have armies of people, 15 to 20 kids. And, you know, the academic requirements are less than here. And guess what? You just can't let your kids, you know, be victims and feel sorry for themselves. You know, they're gimping around. There's 5.5 kids you got in your team. You know, that is what it is. And the mm-hmm. world out there is rough. And you're going to have a boss that's tough and life's not going to be fair. So the sooner you learn to get over that and deal with it and embrace it and really believe in yourself and this team, you know, the further you're going to go in life too. And I've had great kids that bought into that. And so we've really excelled here. Mm-hmm.
So when you're recruiting, are you looking first and foremost at the player's GPA before anything else, or how does that work?
Yeah. And GPA is tricky, 'cause I think coaches, high school and club coaches think that 4.0s are good. And it is good.
They are good.
It's better than my GPA in high school, I'll tell you that, but yeah. That's not even close to it. They have to be in the hardest math and science classes. They have to have had calculus as the minimum. We think kids that have calculus AB are like really good. And no, we're looking for Calc BC. We're looking for multivariable calc and linear algebra. And like I kind of touched on, what STEM extracurricular activities are you doing? I have had kids that have built prosthetic limbs for people in different countries. I've had kids that have NASA and JPL internships. I've had kids that have been coding for the Major League Baseball gaming system. You know, I've had kids that do amazing things, and that's the kind of people we're bringing in. And we're looking at test scores and GPA and classes and STEM extracurricular activities. So when you think about all those things, the percentage of scholar athletes who are have those things are very small, you know.
Mm-hmm. So tell me then, what's it like coaching basically this team of players that are, you know, the smartest people you're probably ever going to meet? I mean, what's that like, especially when you're used to coaching, you know, the typical Division I athlete or a high schooler? Now you have these future rocket scientists and just these studs academically, so to speak.
Yeah, they're all different. Some are extroverted, some are introverted. You know, I'm used to playing with a lot of emotion. if I'm scoring an and one bucket, I'm yelling and one. You know, these kids, a lot of them aren't like that. They're like, I'm not ever going to say that unless I can directly pump my teammate up from it. I'm like, great. However you look at it, like, please do it. We all need to be a little bit more hyped here. But I had a kid who was a neuroscience major. She's off to med school now. And by the way, she says that med school is a cakewalk compared to Caltech undergrad. she one time, you know, we're working on reverse layups and she keeps hitting like the bottom of the rim. And I said, hey, at what point do you do something different since you're hitting the same part of the rim every time? Oh, I'm like, God, it's like a hot stove. It's a hot stove. You keep putting your hand on it, burning. What do you do? You know? And she's like, look, I'm just trying to find where the stove is at this point. I'm like, you know, you're right. You know, these kids, they always have a witty response back and they're very funny. You know, hey, I keep shooting to the left. What, you know, can you help me? What angle should I be shooting at? Well, it's not an angle thing. It's a feeling thing. You know, keep shooting to the left, move your arm a little bit to the right. You know, it's really basic stuff here.
I love it.
There's no formula for this. And so, and not everybody's like that. You know, I can't stereotype everybody. Because I do have some really amazing kids who have a lot of skill level and they do think basketball wise. So, you know, everyone's different. And again, like, I just don't have the team size. But I do have individuals who are very good, top players of the league. So they do have the skill. They do have it. I promise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I've seen it. I mean, you know, I've seen your practice before and, I don't know if your practices are open or anything like that, but anyone who's listening, if you ever have a chance to watch, it's pretty amazing seeing you accomplish a lot in your practices with not what you have, but the amount of players that you have and how intense it is. I mean, I think you had like 7 players when I came and it was an intense practice. You were getting things done, moving from drill to drill. And I was chuckling because you're so sarcastic, but it's, you know, if you know you, which your players know you, you could talk to your players the way that you do. And not that you talk badly, but you know, like the things that you say, as far as at what point do you do something different? Like that's, if you know Bridget, if you know Coach Bridget, that's funny. And yeah, so I definitely encourage anyone to watch a Caltech practice. She gets a lot done. It's awesome.
Well, thank you. That's nice of you to say. And yes, my practice is always open for anybody.
Love it. All right. So do you have any advice for younger aspiring head coaches?
Yeah, I think you can agree with me here on this, but people make all the difference. You coach for the impact that you can make on people, your players, your staff, the community. And when you surround yourself with the right people, I think this career can be so fulfilling. And you know, the opposite is true as well. If you find yourself, you know, not happy or you're feeling, you know, down, you know, you're probably not in the right place. And I think I've gotten a lot of advice from coaches, a lot of different advice, you know, like one, you know, sometimes you got to stick it out and, you know, people want to see that you've been somewhere for a long time. And then I think I've gotten the same or different advice from the same person, even say, you know what, actually life's too short. Life's too short to be miserable anywhere. And if you're not happy, go somewhere where you will be happy. And that's not to say that, you know, loyalty isn't important, because it absolutely is. But, you know, you have a short life. You never know when things are going to be taken away from you, your job, your life, you know, whatever it is. So, you know, surround yourself with great people, people who tell you the truth, who respect you, who care about you, who want you to do well. And, you know, I think that's the best thing for your career and for your life is always to surround yourself with the right people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And especially, you know, that key factor there is surround yourself with people who want you to succeed. That's crucial. And maybe that means telling you something that you don't necessarily want to hear, but they're looking out for your best interest. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. Yeah. My final question is, just, you know, out of curiosity, I mean, we have a lot of time on our hands here since we're still quarantining, so to speak, for the most part. At least I am. I don't know. Maybe some other coaches are. Maybe are you still quarantining?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay. So maybe you've done a lot of reading or Zooms or podcasts, things like that. Is there or are there any books, podcasts, coaches even, maybe recorded Zoom clinics that you recommend people listen to?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of coaching Zoom clinics that I've learned from. I think also though, during this time, and every program's different, but I have a feeling that, you know, we're either going to have a very limited season or no season at all. And every year we are thinking about basketball every day, all day. And so I think I've taken this time to be a little bit more well-rounded and, you know, explore other topics or issues that have taken place, you know, this year or have always been around that I haven't really gotten a chance to learn about. So from a basketball standpoint, The Mentor Leader by Tony Dungy is like always one of my favorite books. I'm almost done with Relentless by Tim Grover. I really like that book. And then The Playbook on Netflix just came out a little bit ago. And I watched the Doc Rivers one and the Jill Ellis one and Dawn Staley one so far. And all of those are absolutely fantastic for any coach or any person who even loves sports. But other books that I've read that I've really enjoyed that aren't really necessarily have to do with basketball is Between the World and Me. A little bit of cultural awareness has been great. And then Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And that is just, you know, everybody, especially young females, who want to learn to be who they are and be bold and be courageous and be strong. It's not an easy world to navigate. And, you know, we're still outnumbered as far as being coaches in women's basketball. Mm-hmm. So for women and especially where I am, women in STEM is still not a super popular thing or a popular major. So, you know, it's for anyone who really just wants to be who they are and not afraid to be who they are. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing during this time.
Awesome. I love it. Well, thanks, Bridge, so much for coming on. I'm super excited to publish this episode. I just think that, you know, where you started and where you are now is just such a great story that anybody could really take a lot away from. So I appreciate it.
Thanks for everything, Sammy. I appreciate you too.